So let's chant Namaskara, right, before we start today's sermon. And then we'll start having a discussion on these questions. Okay. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. As we were discussing last week, right, I was not able to cover all the questions that some of you had raised. We only covered one question actually in the last sermon. So, but I have the questions with me nevertheless from the previous sermon as well. So we'll quickly go through those questions as well, right? So someone had asked a question that I feel like I'm busier than before, and sometimes I feel that I waste a lot of time without anything useful or applying Dhamma. How can I get the best use of my time? Much merits. So that's the question. So I think the simple answer to this question would be, so I think we can think about this question in two parts. So did you all get the question? Yeah, someone is asking how they can get the best use of their time for the sake of Dhamma practice. So there would be two aspects to this, ladies and gentlemen, right? One aspect would be the motivation part here. I mean, you have a lot of time, but perhaps you don't feel motivated to practice the Dhamma, right? So how do we solve that? So that part, what you can do is you can contemplate the drawbacks of life or samsara in order to generate the spiritual urgency, right, that you need in order to practice the path or motivate yourself. So you can contemplate on the drawbacks. Right. So what I mean by the drawbacks? Drawbacks means, for example, you can think about the diseases that human body can get, or you can contemplate about the dangers of samsara, right? That there are hells, right? And we have not always been good person in samsara. We have all done many bad deeds as well. So all those bad deeds, they are just waiting for environment to give the result. If you happen to be caught in that bad environment, then your life will be perhaps, you know, very worse off than what it is right now, right? So you can contemplate about all these things in this way, and you can generate some sort of spiritual urgency or motivation, right, to practice the path. So that is one thing. And then other thing, of course, what you can actually practice. So of course, now I'm not Buddha, right? And no one apart from the Buddha can tell you the perfect thing that you need to practice, right? So that's why until you become Sotapanna, what you have to do is you listen to many sermons and you just try to understand the Dhamma from different point of views, right? Because Dhamma is just not just something that has just one perspective. The core is same, you can say, right? But there are so many different perspectives about how, and according to the way you have developed yourself in samsara, right? In as you have come in the samsara, you have all developed different type of temperaments, or what we call gati. So according to the different gati that you have, right, you will be able to understand Dhamma in different way. Right? Someone else might tell you specific example, and perhaps they can use those examples to understand Dhamma, but perhaps for you those examples might not work, right? Because you have a different temperament, right? So in Buddha Dhamma, we talk about the 37 factors of awakening or enlightenment, right? So there are 37 factors that Buddha says that you need to fulfill in order to attain Nibbana. So now you don't need to worry about all those factors individually. Even if you just fulfill one set of factors in those 37 factors, the other factors will be fulfilled. So you can practice the Dhamma, right, according to the temperament that you have. So what I mean by temperament is some of your spiritual faculties are more developed than the other faculties, right? So perhaps you are someone who is able to concentrate very well. So perhaps, you know, you can use that faculty in order to practice the Dhamma. Or you are someone who is able to take lot of interest in what they do, so you can perhaps use that faculty, right, to practice the path. Or you are someone who is very energetic, who never shies away from putting the effort in the things that you need to do, right? So you can then use that faculty to practice the Dhamma. Or you perhaps you are someone who can do investigation and analysis of something very well, right? So you have a lot of wisdom, or your wisdom faculty is very developed, then you can perhaps use your wisdom faculty in order to practice the path, right? Then you focus on developing the wisdom. So nevertheless, the fundamental thing that you have to do is just that, the developing wisdom, right? It's just from, you can understand Dhamma from different point of view. And So basically what you need to understand is that our problem is that we think that this world is Nitya Sukha Atta, right? So what you have to do in your Dhamma practice as much as possible is to understand Anicca Dukkha Anatta and then try to apply it, right? Or try to think, or let's say try to investigate whether the things that you experience in your life, whether they are also Anicca Dukkha Anatta or not, right? So you can think about the Dhamma practice in that way. Or, you know, if you are someone who does not understand anything whatsoever about the Dhamma, then I can't guarantee you about how you are going to become Sotapanna, but I can tell you something that will definitely help you become Sotapanna in the future, if not in this life, right? And that thing is, you can practice the Kaya Gata Sati, right? So now, of course, when I talk about the Kaya Gata Sati is the first thing in the Satipatthana Sutta, right? So now, of course, traditionally, the Kayagata Sati has been interpreted as the contemplation of body parts, right? But that is just, we can say, maybe one application of the Kayagata Sati, right? Kayagata Sati means the awareness that there is a collection in this world, right? Not just that human body is a collection of parts. Of course, you all know, but you are not just attached to the human body. There are so many things that you are attached to. So I'm not saying just because you contemplate the everything is collection, you are going to become Sotapanna. No, from that contemplation, there is, you need to see Anicca Dukkha and Anatta, right? When Buddha talks about these things, what he says in Satipatthana Sutta, right? There are four contemplations as we know, Kaya, Chitta, Vedana and Dhamma. So at the end of every one of these practices, what Buddha says is that you need to observe the samudaya and nirodha, right? So what is samudaya? So samudaya means, so samudaya is something which is completely incompatible with the birth, right? So when we live our life in normal way, right, day-to-day life, then we are always thinking in terms of birth or creation of things, isn't it? We are always thinking something has been created, something has been born, people are taking birth, the beings are taking birth, right? So we are always thinking in terms of birth and death, basically, right? Or in another words, creation and destruction, right? So that is how we are always thinking. When we practice Satipatthana, eventually we need to realize this Samudaya and Nirodha, right? So if you think about the world in terms of Nitya Sukha and Atta, that is when you get this feeling of what? Birth and death, creation and destruction, right? Something has been created, now it's destroyed, or something is happening to something, or something is doing something, right? The doer, experiencer, birth, death, creation, destruction, all these feelings, they happen because of ignorance, right? So when you are able to understand Anicca Dukkha and Anatta, you will be able to understand that these feelings, they happen, but they are not real, because that is not the true nature of the world, right? So from this Kayagata Sati, right, you can eventually come to understand Anicca Dukkha and Anatta. Perhaps it will not be instant, or it will not be very fast, but see, you might know that when we do this teacher's worship, right, when we do Guru Vanna, then what do we say in the Guru Vanna at the end? The Guna Vruddhiya Vetva and Tapo Vruddhiya Vetva. You have all heard, right? So this Guna Vruddhiya Vetva, what it means is that you grow a good character, may you develop a good gati, may you develop many good qualities, right? So this is the meaning of Guna Vruddhiya Vetva. So you have to do Guna Vruddhiya Vetva and you have to do Tapo Vruddhiya Vetva. What is Tapo Vruddhiya Vetva? Tapo vruddhi avetva means the growth of contemplation, right? How much you have contemplated anicca, dukkha and anatta, that is your guna tapo vruddhi, right? So, tapo vruddhi means, you know, contemplating anicca, dukkha and anatta. Now the funny thing is this, until you become sotapanna, you don't really perfectly understand anicca, dukkha and anatta. So then how do you contemplate anicca, dukkha and anatta without becoming sotapanna? So the simple answer is that you don't contemplate the anicca, dukkha and anatta, but you try to contemplate something that is like anicca, dukkha and anatta, right? And eventually, as your view get more purer and clear and exact, right? Eventually, one day when you are listening to sermon, you will become what? Sotapanna. That is what will happen, right? So until you become sotapanna, the best thing to do is, you know, you can just practice this kaya gata sati. You can just contemplate about everything, whatever you see, experience, right? Or whenever something happens in your life, you can contemplate about the fact that this is just a collection. Whatever that thing is, whether it's psychological, some sort of experience, right? Or whether it is some sort of physical event or whatever it is, you can just contemplate that it is what? Just a collection of something, right? So, collection of causes basically. So, then eventually this practice, kaya gata sati, it will eventually one day for sure it will lead you to nibbana really, or and help you become sotapanna, right? So, even if you don't understand a lot of dhamma and you don't know a lot, the simple thing that you can do in order to make sure that you become sotapanna one day is you can contemplate this fact that everything in the world is collection, right? Now that fact, as I mentioned, it's not enough to become sotapanna, but eventually, you know, as you practice it more, it will make it so easy for you to become sotapanna one day. So that is what you have to do, right? So perhaps when, let's say you have free time, as this gentleman or lady, whoever has asked this question, right? What to do in the free time? So wherever you are, you can just practice this fact that everything is collection. So if you are sitting on the chair, you can think that this chair, there is no chair thing called chair here. There is just a collection of causes, right? This body, there is no thing called human body here, but there are many parts, there are many cells here. That is fact, right? So on and so forth, you can contemplate about anything, even your experiences, right? So when you have some sort of emotions, you can contemplate about whether that is collection or not, right? So let's say you are feeling sad because of something. So now you can contemplate the fact that this sadness that you experience, right? Whether it is collection of what? Collection of causes, right? Whether it is collection of causes or is it one thing? So, try to think about it, right? Collection of causes. What does the collection of causes means? So, sadness is a feeling. I will write feeling of sadness, right? So, sadness, whenever you feel sad, perhaps for example, then you can contemplate on the fact that where did this sadness come from? Is it something that is one thing or is it a collection of causes? So what I mean by collection of causes? So there is some event which has happened, and normally what we think is that this event has caused me this physical or mental suffering, right? That is how we think in normal life, right? Something has happened, and because of that something, that event which has happened, I am now suffering, let's say mentally in this context, right? So you can contemplate on the fact that is it just the event which makes you suffer, or is it your desire in regards to that event, right? So something has happened, perhaps you don't like it to happen. Then, appiyehi sampayogo, Buddha says in the first noble truth, appiyehi sampayogo means what? Appiyehi, you don't like something to happen, or you don't like something, or you dislike something, and it happens. Or you have to associate with the thing that you don't like. So what will happen? You will feel feeling of sadness. But you can see that even that feeling of sadness at least has two factors, right? One is the event which has happened. If it was just the event which was enough by itself to make you suffer, then the thing is, other people around you who are also part of that event, how come they don't suffer from that event and it's only you? Right? So you can practice in this way, right? Feeling of sadness. Now the thing is, usually what we do in our life is we just want to not feel this feeling of suffering, but we are very happy and we are always looking forward to the pleasant feelings, right? The feelings of pleasure, you always look forward to them. So see, what Buddha says in Satipatthana is that all these feelings, right, all this Vedana, we have to recognize them as they are. So what does it mean? Recognizing the feelings as they are, or understanding them as they are. The Buddha uses the word pajanati. So what does this word pajanati means is that you understand something as it is, the true nature of it, right? So when you contemplate, when this sad feeling of sadness happens, then you try to contemplate about it in this way. When the feeling of pleasure happens, then also you need to contemplate, ladies and gentlemen. You can't just leave that feeling as it is, right? You have to contemplate about that as well. This is the thing about the Satipatthana. If you want to become Arhant, then you cannot just understand the things that you don't like and let the things that you like as they are. You need to understand what you like, you need to understand what you dislike, and then eventually you need to understand the things which you neither like or dislike. But first you have to start your contemplation with what? The things that you like and dislike. So actually, what I mean by that is, I mean you like this feeling of pleasure. So you need to contemplate that whether that feeling of pleasure, does it just come from the event or does it come from your liking or disliking? So you have to clarify all these things with to a very high level, right? You have to have absolute clarity about these things. You can't just tell yourself a nice story, yes, yes, we have heard sermon many times and of course the suffering does not come from the event. We know it comes from the liking and disliking. So then you would not be blaming the event when the event happens, if you understand that, right? But because we don't understand this clear enough, then when the event happens, then we want to blame the event for the pleasure or pain that we feel, right? So you all understand what I mean by contemplation of feeling of sadness as collection of causes, what I mean by that? That this feeling is result of what? Collection of causes. There are multiple factors which are contributing to this feeling of sadness, or right, the feeling of suffering, the mental suffering. And you can contemplate about all these feelings really. When you have anxiety, then again you can contemplate whether it is collection or not. Is it just one thing, or is it collection of causes? But there are some causes which have come together, and because of those causes coming together, you are feeling in this way. So if it is only because of causes coming together that you are feeling in this way, then that means the universe does not have any preference to make you feel any of these feelings. Those feelings, they happen because causes have come together. If the causes were not together, that effect would not have been there. So that is something you can contemplate, right? And when you contemplate about the collection of causes, you can also contemplate what? If it is the collection of causes which generates all these feelings, for example, then what is your role as being someone, self? What is the role of you? So you are all somebody, right? So what is your role in all generation of all these feelings? When you feel sadness, one of the things that you expect in that situation is you have this wanting for sadness, or this feeling of sadness, to not happen when it happens, right? So can you contemplate about this fact that what is your role in that? Because if it was up to in your control, or if it was up to your control about what kind of feelings are generated in your mind, then would you not be able to prevent the suffering always? If you are in control of something, would you let the problem happen and then try to solve the problem, or would such a situation not happen in the first place? Try to think about it. So imagine that you are king of this, let's say there is some kingdom, and you are king of that kingdom. And And you know that there are some people who are going to create a problem in your kingdom. So do you let the problem happen? You are king, you are all powerful in your own kingdom, right? Will you let the problem happen and then try to solve them, or will you prevent the problem from happening in the first place if you are king? You have no interest in letting those things happen. Then what would you do? You would prevent the problems from happening, right? You would not let the problem happen and then try to solve them. Isn't that so? So then how come all these feelings happen and then you have to do something in order to, you know, come out of these problems really? The feeling of sadness, for example, or anxiety, fear, stress, whatever bothers you, whatever takes away your peace. How come you have to do something? So these are some suggestions about how you can contemplate, right? So now actually, funny thing is, see, I have now talked about two satipatthanas actually already. I have told you the first satipatthana is what? The kayagata sati, right? Just this contemplation that everything is collection of causes, that is the first satipatthana, kayagata sati. And this second contemplation, that everything, sorry, all these feelings and emotions and moods that we have, right? So, they are all anicca, dukkha and anatta, like how we have discussed just now, that is their nature, right? That is the second satipatthana. And then there is a third one. So, third one is citta anupasana, right? So, citta anupasana means what? Citta anupasana means the contemplation of the citta or the mind, right? So, for example, you can think about this. So let's say you get not feeling. When we talk about the mind, right? Mind, you know, there are what you have infinite type of different experiences, right? So now those infinite type of different experiences, we can categorize them into some simple categories. So let's say one category is you have a liking of something. So a mind happens and that mind has liking about something, right? So perhaps you are going somewhere, traveling, and you see some advertisement or you see some shop or something and you see some object. And now you suddenly understand that now you have a liking or desire for something. So you see something and you have a liking or desire for something. So I'll just write that mind with liking, let's say, in a very simple sense, mind with liking. So what do we call liking? Liking means basically raga, liking some things, liking people or things, whatever. So we call it raga. So So this is G, by the way. Yeah, raga. So let's say a mind happens with the raga. So now you can contemplate about this mind that has liking, the mind with the raga. You can contemplate about that mind. The same two questions you can ask yourself. Is it the collection of causes, this raga, the mind which has happened with the raga, or liking, is it collection of causes or is it just one thing? So what I mean by collection of causes, there are many causes as we discussed before, right? And they are the ones who are responsible for creation of this mind. So that is one thing, sorry, one way to think about this. I mean, there are only two ways in which if we call this something, then you can only explain this event in two ways. Either it is collection of causes or it is one thing. Those are the only way you can explain this. Either it is one thing, which means it is not effect, right? Or it is a effect. So you just need to analyze whether this is effect or not. Let's say you are going on, you are traveling somewhere and you did see a shop. Let's say clothes shop or jewelry shop or something you did see on your way when you are traveling somewhere. So when you did see that, now you suddenly feel desire, right? Let's say you did see some nice clothes and now you have a desire to get them. So that is a mind with the liking or the raga, right? So what are some factors which are contributing to that raga? In that moment, when that mind happened, what are the different factors which are contributing to this raga? So one is sight, right? You did see, before you did see that shop, did you have a liking even before you did see? No, right? Before you were just going and the mind was normal. But after seeing something, what happened? You liked it, right? What you did see. So sight is one factor. Agree? Yes? So I will write sight. So apart from the sight, what are the other causes? Okay. So when you were traveling, wherever you were traveling, do you think this shop might have been the first clothing shop that you did see on your whole journey? Probably not, right? You might have seen many clothing shops. How come you did not feel any liking for any other clothes, but only when you did see those specific clothes, you did have the liking? So then, it is not just the sight itself which is making you like, making you have this raga or liking for those clothes, right? So, let's say you are traveling with some friends and they also see that clothing shop. So, how come they don't have the liking? So, they also see, but they don't have any, you know, they don't feel anything special. They just feel, yeah, clothes. That's it. They don't have any liking or desire to buy those clothes. But you have a desire or liking to buy those clothes when you see. So you can see, if it was just the sight which was responsible for this raga, then everyone who looks at that sight of that shop, they would feel raga and they would all want to buy clothes, right? And then that shopkeeper would be very rich. But do you think something like that happens? No, right? You know, it is subjective, right? It's not just the sight itself which causes the raga, right? There are other factors. So, so those other factors, let's say I will call them views. So what I mean by views? Views means basically how you think about something. How you think about something. So let's say there is a... So, when we are living with the people, then we all have many views about other people in our own minds, right? That he is a good person, he is a bad person, he is angry and he is very kind and all these views we have in our minds, right? About the people. So, when we see them, then it is these views who also generate or who help the mind generate these experiences that we feel, right? So, you know that when people, they look at you, do you think everyone feels about you the same way? No, right? People, they, all the people, they look at you, but everyone feels about you in the different ways, right? That is why, that is because the views are different, right? So then, let's say this raga, right? It is result of at least what? These two causes, the sight and views. Right, and then of course you can break down the sight into the causes. Right, you can think about what are the causes for the sight, for example. What are the causes for the sight? You, the eye should be working, optic nerve should be working, brain should be working, right? And all these causes are there. And even for the views, now this is a little bit more complicated, but even about the views, you can think that the views are also what? So, okay, let's think about the views in the next step. So, is this clear? So, we contemplate about the mind in this way also. What? The same thing. Is it collection of causes or is it one thing? That is the question that we always need to ask ourselves. Until you become Arhant, you need to keep asking yourself the same question. Is it collection of causes or is it one thing? That is what you need to do. Right? So, now of course, in when I did talk about this Chitta Anupasana, right? I did just give you one example, the mind with the liking. But do you just have mind with the liking or do you have many, many different experiences? You have many different experiences, right? So, sometimes your you feel disliking or hatred or annoyance irritation, frustrations, right? These are not the mind with the liking or raga, right? Those are the mind with the dosha or patiga or dvesha, we can say. So you can contemplate about that as well. Disliking, is it just something which happens from the side? So now, of course, you know, these are all very wide things. I have taken example of sight, but you can think about the sound. When the sound happens and you like that sound, is it just the sound which makes you like the sound, or are there some other factors also contributing to that? So, let's say you have child and you love your child's voice. So, now imagine that somehow, if I convince you that this voice is not your child's voice. Or let's say I convince you that this child is not really your child. Someone swept it at the birth. The nurse did make some mistake and she gave you the wrong child. Now your whole life you had what? Liking hearing that child's voice. But now suddenly, now maybe you feel annoyed or frustrated. She is not even my child and I have always liked it, and you would be annoyed now if this liking happens, right? So see, there are always many factors, right? Whenever we talk about any experience. So now you can think about the sound. We did take example of sight. And so basically you can take examples from all six senses, right? Because when we talk about the experiences, fundamentally there are only six type of experiences. The sight, sound, smell, taste, touch and thought. So you can contemplate about all those six experiences. Whether those six experiences, whenever those experiences happen, you have the liking and disliking, or you have any problem with them and you don't feel at peace, then you can ask yourself this question. Until you become arhant, that is what you have to do. This is the satipatthana in a very simplified sense. So you can think about the liking, you can think about the dislike or the annoyance, right? So you can contemplate about the both sides. So that is the Chitta Anupasana. And of course, when Buddha talks about the Chitta Anupasana, he does not just talk about the Raga and Dvesha, he talks about the Moha as well. So sometimes, not sometimes, all the time in our normal life, the life of non-arhans, there is always a feeling of sense of self, right? This feeling of sense of self. So you can contemplate even about that sense of self. Whether that sense of self, is it also a collection of causes or is it just a one thing? You can contemplate about that. So what do we call that? The sense of self, it comes from where? The moha, the delusion, right? So the mind, let's say if I were to write mind with the delusion. Mind with the delusion. So what I mean by delusion, there can be many delusion. Let's not use this word delusion. Let's use the word ego. But when I say ego, I don't mean you feel you are above everyone else. That's not what I mean by ego. I mean you just feeling that you are here. That's what I mean, right? Just the sense of self. Sometimes, of course, you feel you are better than everyone. Sometimes you feel, no, you are not better than everyone. You are the worst person. Sometimes you feel, no, I am just like everyone else. I'm normal. So all these three sheds, right? They are all sheds of what? The ego, right? Superiority, inferiority, and you feel you are equal to everyone. So those are three sheds of this ego. So all those sheds, I just mean by ego, right? Not just superiority complex. So mind with the ego or sense of self, right? So we call this, that this happens because of moha. Moha or avidya. So if I were to give Pali word is avidya or avidya actually. The avidya is Sanskrit or Sinhala. So mind with ego, when this feeling happens, or it's not feeling, this experience happens, let's say that even when there is no liking or disliking in your mind and you are just neutral, even in those moments, you feel what? That you are there. Wherever you are, you feel you are there. someone, existing being is there. That is how you feel. So you can contemplate about that feeling, whether that feeling itself, is it also not a collection of causes? You can ask yourself that question and then do a honest investigation, right? Don't just accept what Buddha says. Buddha gives a method, he is not giving us any conclusion. In Satipatthana, he is giving more of a method, not a conclusion. He is not saying, you know, observe all these things and then tell yourself a story that this is anicca, dukkha, anatta. That is not what he is saying. He is asking us to do a real hard investigation and think about these things sincerely, whether and seriously, right? So this feeling, I mean, even this new, when there are no likings and dislikings, then you don't have any frustrations in your mind, and you are in a normal worldly sense, you are okay. But even in those moments, there is this sense of self in those experiences. So you can contemplate about that. Is that sense of self also not dependent on so many causes? So what if your body was not working in that moment? Would you feel that feeling? In that moment, when you felt in any given moment that you are there, if the body was not working, the physical body, then what would you have? What would happen? Would this feeling of self be there? No, right? So that is one factor. Then let's say memory was not working. Then maybe you will feel that you are there. But would you have idea about who you really are? Right now, if I ask you who you are, you would give me some answer that I come from here and I did do this in my life before I was born here, and this your life story you would tell me. So is that not dependent on the memory? If the memory was not working, then what would happen? Memory is also a contributing factor to the sense of self. Right. So let's not go into too much detail, because then we can cover the whole sermon with this one topic. It won't be finished. So this is also a type of experience. Either you have experience or mind with the liking, you have mind with the disliking or annoyance, right? Those things. You have mind with the ego. Then there are other types of mind as well. Sometimes you feel very concentrated or focused, isn't it? You feel like you are in some sort of dhyana or samadhi. You are super concentrated, and other times you are just so distracted, you can't even focus on very simple things. So you can contemplate about those minds as well, really. Right? So Buddha says that, really, that even when the mind is concentrated, you need to think about the fact, is this something which has always been there, or is this something which has a reason? I mean, it has been, it has arisen just now. Is it something which has always been there? Do you always feel concentrated? Or do you always feel distracted? No, you sometimes feel concentrated, you sometimes feel distracted. So even that focus, it keeps varying. Can you control that as you like? The yogis, for example, the people who try to do some sort of meditation, why do they have to use some technique in order to generate that concentration? Why, without the technique, they cannot get their mind concentrated? Think about it. If they, so when they are using some sort of technique, right, some sort of meditation technique, whatever it might be, if they have to use some sort of meditation technique in order to concentrate their mind, then that means what they had to do was, they had to gather causes in some way in order to create some sort of experience. So if they had to gather some causes in order to create some sort of experience, when those causes are not there, or when those causes are scattered, then what will happen to them? We need to understand one simple fact, that when we are not arhants, our psychological or emotional security, right? So that emotional or psychological security, it's always dependent on something, right? If you are mother, perhaps your security or you, your emotion, you feel emotionally secure because of your children or your family. If you are a businessman, then you feel secure, right? Or you feel okay, your life is okay, everything is okay. You feel that when your business is doing well. So everyone who is not Arhan, they all have some sort of psychological or emotional security. And they all have their psychological or emotional security dependent on something. Perhaps your psychological or emotional security is dependent on the property that you have, or family that you have, or money that you have, or status that you have in society, or the fame, or you have some knowledge, or you have some, I don't know, something, right? Everyone who is not Arhan, their security is always dependent on something. So why did I mention this factor? So why was this meditator or this yogi, why did he wanted to do meditation and achieve some sort of spatial concentration? Because he did think that all these worldly things, they are unreliable, right? The wealth, someone can take away the wealth from me. Children, someone can kidnap my children, they can kill my children, they can do all these things, so I can't rely on the children for my safety or to feel secure. So he realizes all those things. So what he does, he goes to jungle and then he tries to do meditation. So there is nothing wrong, it is not a sin to do that. But then you have to ask yourself this question, how come you have to do something in order to achieve all these states, these meditation states? How come you have to do something? And if you have to do something in order to achieve all these states, then what will happen when you are not able to do that? So imagine, so this is like, you know, imagine that you like ice cream and your happiness depends on your ability to eat ice cream. So what happens on the day that when you are not able to eat ice cream for some reason? Let's say you get diabetes, or let's say your body is paralyzed. So now you are just like a mummy, you can just see things, but you can't move your hands, legs or anything. You can't even eat any, all those things really. People, they are feeding you food from your throat. They have cut your throat and put some pipes and they are feeding you. I'm sorry if you feel disgusted, but do these things not happen to people? What will happen? So imagine if such a situation happens, then what will happen to this person who feels very happy dependent on eating ice cream? What will happen? So the yogi and everyone, the non-arhans, all the non-arhans, they have this fundamental quality, the weakness, really, right? Weakness, because these things, if your security depends on anything outside yourself in some way, then obviously you are slave to those things, right? You are not a free man or woman. You are just a slave. So even about the concentrated mind or distracted mind, you can contemplate this. This is the thing. I mean, when Buddha talks about the Chitta Anupasana, he is giving a full range of contemplation, right? Even about the wisdom. Can you understand everything that you want to understand always? How come that is so? If the ability to understand belongs to you, then you should be able to understand things as you like, and when you like, as and when you like. Should that not be so? How come there have to be some causes in order for understand? This is not understand, this mind with ego, but let's say if I were to write. So when we talk about the pragya or panya in Pali, right? Or in English we talk about wisdom. When we talk about the wisdom, so let's say right now you are in sermon, let's say now most of the minds which are arising here in you are all mind with the wisdom. So let's say I will call this panya. So you can contemplate about the minds happening right now. Is it collection of causes or is it one thing? What I mean by collection of causes, what you understand right now from this sermon, is it not dependent on so many causes? For one, your knowledge of English. What if you did not understand English? Were you born with any understanding of any language? Born? No, right? You learned languages. So then that means data had to be added, the data or knowledge or views, they had to be added to the mind in order for it to, you know, make this happen. Let's say if I write mind with wisdom, or let's say understanding anything in very broad sense. See, right now, when you understand what I'm saying, you are so sure that the thing that you understand is what I mean to convey, right? So, okay, let's go there a little bit later. Mind with the wisdom or understanding, right? You know, even for this mind where you can understand and comprehend other things, so many causes have to be there, right? Isn't that so? For example, to understand this sermon, since it's in English, you need the knowledge of English. So, and then of course, I mean, is there such a thing as English, or there are just collection of words? There are collection of words. There is no such thing as the English. When we say English, what does the English mean really? English just means collection of many words, right? If I ask you, I will write C-A-T, cat. So, is this English? I mean, it is in the English, but is this the English language? This is not the English language. This is part of the English language, right? If I give you another word, dog, then now if I ask you, is that English language or is it a part of English language? So, whenever I give you any word whatsoever, what you will always say is that those words, they are part of English language, right? None of the words are English language in themselves. Isn't that so? So then what does the English language mean if we remove all these words? Does it mean anything? So English language, it just refers to what? Collection of words. So now I'm not taking shots at the English, but all languages are like that. Whether we take Sinhala or Sanskrit or Hindi or Chinese or Spanish or whatever language we take, Mandarin I mean, whatever language we take, right? Those language, they mean what? Just collection of words, right? That's all they mean. Anyway, so see, in this collection of causes, right, whenever you do this type of contemplation and analysis, you can always think to yourself, even the causes themselves, are they also one thing or are they also collection of causes? You can take any cause. So for example, you might say that this pen is made up of electron. Then you can ask yourself, is electron one thing or is electron also collection of causes? You can ask yourself that question. And you all know, if you have had basic science education, then you might know that electron also is not some sort of fundamental particle. It is also made up of some other causes, right? So you can contemplate about the causes, and then you can, if you find some causes of causes, so it's like, you know, this is the pattern, really. You take one thing, and then you can find two causes for that, you can find more causes for that, and you can find more causes like that. And however much you try to find, you will not find one thing. That is what will happen. So, anyway, so mind with the understanding or mind with the lack of understanding, concentrated mind, distracted mind, raga, dvesha, moha, all this mindfulness, you can contemplate about the mindfulness. Do you always feel mindful? Utmost mindful? Do you feel like that every moment? No, it happens sometimes. Sometimes it does not happen. So, all these different experiences, eventually to become arhant, you have to have a thorough understanding of your own mind, really. Every single experience that happens, you need to have reflected on that experience. So perhaps that is very far away, but you can at least start from the contemplation about the Kaya and Vedana. So Kaya means what? So Kaya basically applies to all phenomenon, whether they are mental or physical, we can apply it, right? This fact that there is a collection of causes whenever we talk about something, that fact you can apply it to the physical matter or you can apply it to the mental phenomenon. And for the beginning, maybe instead of applying on very advanced things, maybe you can just apply it on your feelings or emotions or moods, right? Because usually at the beginning of the practice, right, there are lots of fluctuations and roller coasters, right? Because you are still not perfectly used to practice the Buddha Dhamma, then you will feel so many fluctuations and roller coasters, ups and downs. You feel extreme pleasure and then you feel vexation. Then you feel pleasure, you feel vexation. So there are extreme cycles of that. Then those times, maybe instead of thinking about very deep and advanced things, maybe you can just contemplate about those simple things, about your moods, right? So that is also part of the practice. So you have to understand them. So this is Chitta Anupasana. And then final thing is Dhamma Anupasana, right? So Dhamma Anupasana basically means just the contemplation of... So Buddha of course gives very technical explanations for all these things. But in one simple way you can say that Dhamma Anupasana means thinking about the thinking, really. So first what we have to do in order to practice our path is we have to use thinking in order to get rid of the defilements. But then thinking itself is also a defilement, if you want to think. So see, we did talk about the previous week, we did talk about this word, salayatana, right? When normal senses, the six senses that we have, when they are used, what? To do the business of raga, dvesha, moha, in order to play the game of like, dislike and ego. When we use those six senses in order to fulfill those agenda, then that moment when those things are happening, what process is happening in the mind? The defilement process is happening in the mind. So when indriya, right, when the six senses, when they are used as salayatana, you are not arhant. Arhant is never using his six senses as salayatana. As in, he is not searching for something. Last week in the sermon, we were talking about this fact, right? I mean, one of the big source of the suffering in your life is because you are always searching for things, isn't it? You are searching for... maybe you are not searching, but this searching, waiting, all these are all connected things. Right now, perhaps, you know, you... even though you are in sermon and you have come here to understand Dhamma and to become arhant, maybe your mind is not fully here. Your mind is perhaps focused on some other things which are waiting for you later on after this sermon. So you think there is something which is waiting for you after this. So that feeling is there, right? Arhant will never have that feeling, but he will understand, right? If he has a timetable, he has scheduled all these things, he will understand that yes, in conventional sense there is such a thing waiting, but you know that we have to understand what that feeling really means, right? And that feeling of waiting for something that is responsible for so many of your life suffering, right? So that will not go away until you are fully done with this practice of Satipatthana. So when I'm using the word Satipatthana repeatedly, so you might think I'm saying something different, right? So what I mean fundamentally, as we have discussed before, Satipatthana, basically, even though now Satipatthana just is a formal structural way of thinking about our practice of Dhamma, but basically, even if you don't understand any of the things that I do, what you have to do is you have to just practice this one thing, collection of causes. And when you understand that more and more, and eventually when you become Sotapanna, now, whenever you are in the correct state of mind, right, and whenever you are doing kusala, then in those moments, you are already automatically doing Satipatthana. You don't need to consciously or necessarily know all these things. I'm just showing these things to you so that you can have a rough idea about where we have to go and what is the path, what lies ahead, right? But you don't necessarily have to know these things. Satipatthana basically means practicing anicca dukkha anatta or establishing the awareness of anicca dukkha anatta, right? Satipatthana, establishing the mindfulness. But mindfulness of what? Mindfulness that this word is anicca dukkha anatta, that mindfulness. So first we use thinking in order to get rid of our defilements, but then if you want to think, right, that is still a defilement. Because if you want to think, what if you die right now and you have a wanting to think? Or let's say you have a wanting to think something specific. Let's say imagine that you read something, let's just say, and now you have a desire that I want to understand this and I want to think about this and I want to understand it very thoroughly and something like that. So you have a desire to use your own mind in some way. So even that desire you have to get rid of that. But first what you have to do is, first, so these six senses are there, sight, sounds, eye and ear and nose and tongue and body and the mind. So those six faculties are there, six senses are there. So first you use thinking in order to get rid of the lower defilements, and then you have to do thinking about thinking itself as well. You have to understand what thinking really means. We give a lot of value in modern world to this thinking, but you know, thinking is not something very special. It is not special in the way we think it is special. It's just a phenomenon like everything else. It is not something really special. But we think that when we get some nice ideas, then we think there is something special which has happened, really. So I was basically saying, right, the salayatana. When the salayatana means, you know, you are using six senses in order to search something or in order to get rid of vexation. So whenever and as long as you do that, right, you have to keep practicing satipatthana, because your practice is not finished. You are not arhant yet. As long as you have to do that, as long as you don't understand the vexation fully, then you will always feel that you have to do something in order to get rid of vexation. You will always feel like that, and then you will always try to do something in order to get rid of vexation. And as long as you do something in order to get rid of vexation, so I'm not talking about the Dhamma practice, right? Because Dhamma practice is something we do for vexation, but then eventually vexation will not happen because of Dhamma practice. Everything else apart from the Dhamma, let's say, whenever you do anything else apart from Dhamma in order to get rid of vexation, right? So let's say merit also I give, so you can do merits, that is also okay, right? But so those are the four satipatthana, right? So very detailed answer for the question, how to best use your mind time, whoever has asked this question. Okay. Right, so I will I hope that we are able to cover some questions today at least. So someone has asked a question. That they have given a situation that sometimes they try to wake up their sister to go to sermon, but when they try to do that, the sister, they get very annoyed. So they are asking, is this merit or demerit and how? So of course, physical actions or verbal things that you do, what you speak or what you do with your body, that itself is not a merit or demerit. It is the intention, right? So if you are waking up your sister to go to the sermon so that she can get freedom from suffering, if that is the intention, then obviously when you are doing that, you don't want to harm her. You are not doing that out of ill will, right? You are doing it to help her. So with that intention, of course, it will be merit. But then they are asking, she gets annoyed when they try to wake her up, right? Whoever has asked this question, when they try to wake up their sister to go and watch sermon, then she gets annoyed. So that annoyance, if you are not doing this, I mean as in waking her up to annoy her, then even though she gets annoyed, you will get married, but maybe she gets annoyed. So perhaps you can find a way to let her find a way to push her towards the watching sermon without, you know, annoying her. So that is something you can do. But regardless, if your intention is not, whenever your intention does not have this So Buddha talks about these two things, Vyapada and Vihinsa. So Vyapada means trying to destroy something. That is Vyapada in a very simple sense. And then there is a Vihinsa. So Vihinsa basically means reducing value of something, really. So when people, they feel hurt, right, then what they try to do is reduce the value of other people. Sometimes, maybe not always, many times, people, they try to reduce the value of other people in their mind, right? So let's say someone does not talk with you nicely, let's say, then later on you think about them and you try to think about their bad qualities, right? You try to think about their bad qualities and you tell yourself, see, they are such a bad person, they are always like that, and you will find many of their mistakes in your mind. You will try to recall all their mistakes, and basically what you are trying to do when you do that is you are trying to reduce the value of that person in your mind, right? By doing that, all those things, and you are trying to tell yourself, see how good I am, but they are like this idiot, they are doing all these things and they are a very bad person. So you are trying to basically reduce the value of other people in your mind, right? So this is Vihinsa, and then you are trying to basically annoy or hurt other people even in very small ways. That is Vihinsa, sorry, the Vyapada. Even when you try to hurt other people in very small ways, right? Like society is not going to lock you up when you do certain things, but you know if you do those things then other people will get hurt, but you intentionally and deliberately do those things to hurt other people. So perhaps let's say you don't like your boss in the company, perhaps. So you know he gets very annoyed if you go late to the office, so you intentionally go late to the office to annoy your boss. So what are you trying to do? Are you trying to make your boss happy, or are you trying to hurt him? You're trying to hurt him, right? Give him suffering. I mean, regardless of whether he suffers or not because of your action, you go late deliberately in order to do what? To hurt your boss. So that intention is there. So when such an intention is there, then what will happen? Demerit will happen, right? So whenever you are trying to hurt other people, even in smallest way, so do you think this is a crime if you go late to your office? But what if you go late to your office in order to hurt your boss, perhaps, or make him suffer? Now you are doing demerit. It's not a crime from the perspective of society, but you are generating demerit, right? And perhaps when you get to be the boss one day, maybe in the sansara, then now you will end up with employees who will try to come late to hurt you in the same way that you have tried to hurt your boss right now. So then you will get the payback from the nature, right? So why I say this thing is what we have to do ultimately. So the sister, she did get annoyed, but what we can think is, you know, sometimes even in Buddha's time, there were people who were very resistant to the Buddha or the disciples of Buddha helping them. They were very resistant. They were, you know, very stubborn, and they were very insisting on what they believed to be true, and they did not wanted to listen to anybody, and they thought they are doing fine. They don't need anybody's help. So now Buddha or other monks, right, they could see that if they do something in certain way, then initially they will feel hurt, this person whom they are trying to help, right? But in long term, because of the way they have helped and the help that they have received from them, they will have a better future, right? So then they did try to help them. They did know that when they try to help these people, they will get very annoyed. They did know that. But they did do it because they were very confident that in the long term, what will happen? Their future will be better off because of them having given them help to these people. So then they did do those things really without any worry, right? So we also have to be practical like that. And this is not something that I'm cooking up. The Buddha himself says these things really. So now I don't have Pali scriptures to give you, but I have studied these things, right? So I know Buddha has said these things really. So ultimately that is what we have to keep in our mind, right? When we are trying to live with the people, we have to think about whether in the long term, right, what we are doing, whether it is helpful or not. Sometimes you have to take bitter medicine in order to heal yourself. That does not mean doctor is trying to hurt you, does it? So you also have to think about that, right? You also have to think in that way. So is this a merit or demerit? If the intention is just to help your sister, it is a merit, right? But if you know that your sister don't like to go to sermon, and because you have some score to settle with your sister, then you are just, if you are doing that to annoy her, then now it is what? A demerit, right? So do you all understand? Right. Okay. Next question. So someone has asked a question which is very similar to the earlier question that we did address. So I will skip it. So someone has asked that when they receive appreciation, then they feel very egoistic and they feel they are very great. So how to apply Dhamma to this situation? So I think about this praise and blames, you have to understand one thing, that this defilement of praise and blame, like people, they blame you and they praise you. So when they praise you, then you feel like a balloon, and then when you are inserted, then that balloon is burst, right? So these things, they keep happening in your life. So you have to understand one thing, ladies and gentlemen, that these things, they will not go away until you become arhant. Until you are arhant, at least in very tiny ways, these things will remain. If you insert someone who has, you know, gotten rid of the five lower defilements, as in, you know, they have become anagami, even then if you, you know, insult them, they will feel at least a little bit annoyed. It's only arhant who feel no annoyance whatsoever at all. They don't feel anything special when people praise them, and they don't feel anything, you know, they don't feel hurt no matter how many people blame them. But of course they will correct themselves if, you know, there is something to be corrected. And if they, when people, they praise them, and if it is something that is good, then they will continue regardless of whether people, they praise them or not. So they will be able to do such a thing, but they will not be affected by praise or blame. But whom am I talking about? The arhants. The non-arhants, right, because they don't understand what the praise and blame really means, or at least their realization is not finished, they still are affected by this praise and blames, really. So, now, a simple way, so when there might be so many ways to think about this praise and blames, you can think about the praise and blame from the perspective of karma and vipaka, that this is sastha or vipaka, you can think like that. Or another way, usually the way I try to think about this praise and blame is, I try to think this really, collection of causes. That is what I try to practice whenever people, they praise me or blame me. I just try to think about this fact that this is a collection of causes, right? So, if people, do you think, is there anything that you can do for which people will, everyone, everywhere, all the time in the world, he will praise you for that thing? Is there anything like that? For which everyone will praise you, no matter what time it is, they will praise you, and no matter what period of history you take, they will praise you like that. Do you have anything like that? Do you know anything like that which people will always praise? Maybe the whole world will praise you, but there is one person who really, really dislikes you, and they will find small mistake in what you have done, and they will blame you. Will that not happen? Right? So, what I want to say is that, see, this praise and blames, these are just collection of causes. So now this might sound very abstract, but what I mean to say is that, see, when we talk about the people, right, when we talk about the beings, when we talk about the beings, ladies and gentlemen, a very simple way to think about the beings is you can think about a robot, really. So imagine that there is a robot. So how do you make a robot? So you take some motors and you take steel and you make hands and you join all these parts and then you have a robot. So just to show robot, I'm drawing a square face. So now you know in the robot, what are the two things that we have within a robot? We have a hardware and software, isn't that so? There is a hardware as in the physical matter, right? There are motors, there are wires, there are circuits, all these things are there. That is what? Hardware, right? The physical part. And what is the software in the robot? So on these circuits, right, we have programmed some things, right? We have put on some programs and algorithms in the way how they are supposed to function, right? So we have put in some sort of algorithms. So now imagine that there is a robot, and now they call this, they are particular class of robots, they call them humanoid robots. So they look very like, they very much like humans, right? So imagine that you had one of those robots who look very much like the humans, right? So I think they are still improving all these things, and perhaps at the moment you don't have a perfect look-alike of human yet. But in the future, you will probably have. But imagine that we bring that robot from the future to here in this room. And he's sitting here in front of the sermon. And then suddenly, he stands up and he starts blaming all of you. Imagine that somehow he has lived with all of you and he knows your name and he knows something about your life. And suddenly, during a live sermon, he stands up and he starts blaming all of you. And now you all feel so annoyed. Now tell me, what are you getting annoyed or angry on? Who is in here who is blaming you? Tell me, what is the answer to that question? So some people, you know, they will obviously get angry on the what is called robot, and then they will start to perhaps, you know, take a maybe baseball bat or something. Imagine if they had one, and then they will start to hit the robot with that baseball bat or something, and they will beat the heck out of the robot because they think there is something here which has hurt them. That is how they feel, right? That is why they are trying to, you know, basically break this robot. So tell me, what thing in the robot did blame all of you? Is it the motor in the hand which blamed you? Is it the speaker or amplifier in the throat that did blame you? Is it the software which did blame you? So imagine that if there was a algorithm or program in this robot which did say that when it is sharp 8:45, stand up and blame everyone. So now you don't know anything that this is just a robot, right? Because he looks completely like a human. So now when he blames all of you at 8:45, then now you think there is someone who has done it. But tell me, who has really done it? Who has blamed you? Is there a question, answer to that question in the case of robot? Can you give me any answer about who has really blamed you? When the robot blames you? And imagine that someone programs them that whenever they see you, they praise you. Okay? So now the thing is, you don't know that they are just robots. So every time when they praise you, you think, ah, robot has praised me. Wow, I'm so good. So that is how you feel. So now you think there is something in here or someone who has praised you. But tell me, think critically and give me answer if you can. Is there something or someone in here who has praised you or blamed you in the robot? There are motors, there are circuits, there are wires, there are metal parts, right? All sorts of things are there. But can you say any specific thing which has blamed you or praised you? Can you say where did that come from? That blame or praise? The only thing you can say is that this blame or praise that you did get from this robot, it did just come from a collection of causes. That's all, right? What else can you say, really? So, see, now the thing is, because now I'm talking about the example of robot, it seems so easy. But what if it turns out when you analyze what we call human beings, that they are also just like this? They just think that they are somebody, but then can you not program this robot as well to think that he is somebody? Can you not put in his program that act like a king, let's say? You put a program into this robot that whenever he is among the human beings, he has to act like a king. So he walks in a very royal way and he talks like royalty, right? And so he behaves like a king. So can he not do that if he is programmed? He behaves like that according to the program, but that means what? It doesn't mean anything apart from the fact that there is just a hardware and software which is working together to do something. So is there anything special in that really? What is special? Tell me. When there are certain causes, then you also blame people and you praise them. When there are certain causes, then this robot also blames people and praises people. So what is really the difference between you and robot? So you might think that we have biological cells and the robot does not have biological cells. Okay, but the thing is, even those biological cells, they are not something special. Are the electrons, protons and neutrons in the biological cells, are those electrons, protons and neutrons special electron neutrons and protons which are not found outside the human body? Or they are also just like the electrons, protons and neutrons which are everywhere else in this world, in the whole universe? Isn't that so? So what is special then? Tell me. So this praise and blame, ladies and gentlemen, it will annoy you and it will hurt you until you don't understand these things, really. The moment you understand what is happening, then you can respond to these blames and the praise and blames or insults that you get. You can respond to them and you can deal with them, but you will not have any problem, annoyance or frustrations, right? Arhant also lives with everyone else, but there is no problem. He does never have a mental problem, really. So that is a way I would think about this, and that is how I have contemplated about this, really. So I'm not saying I'm free. I also have to do more. I'm not arhant, but this is how I have contemplated, and this is what I have found. Whenever you contemplated about these things, right, you will see for yourself whether these things are true or not. So I will let it be with that question. So someone has asked a question. Though we are trying to think that there are no fixed things or people around us, always we experience fixed individuals. So I feel like the experience is more powerful than what we are trying to contemplate. So we have to understand something that whether there are fixed things or not, that is one fact. And whether we feel there are fixed things or not, that is another thing. We have to differentiate between those two things, right? So even if there is a no snake here, there is no snake on this table, that is a fact right now. But whether you feel in your mind whether there is a snake here or not, that is a different matter, right? The objective truth here is that, of course, there is no snake here, but someone might feel that there is a snake here. So then, if someone were to feel that there is a snake here, then how do we have to help them? We first have to somehow convince them that what they think is here is not really here. That is the first thing. Is that not so? We have to first help them convince themselves that the snake that they think is here is not really here. That's the first thing. And once we convince them that the snake that they feel which is in here is not really here, now then there is a second question. Isn't that so? What is the second question? If there is no snake here, then how come in their own minds they feel that there is a snake here? Because when they take this snake here seriously, imagine that they think that there is a king cobra here away with the raised hood, right? And it's staring right at them. This person who feels that there is a snake here, the snake, he thinks that snake is staring at them, and soon enough the snake will come and the snake will bite them. So they are very afraid when they are sitting wherever they are sitting. So first we convince them what that snake is not here. Then they still feel the snake is here, but now they can see rationally that the snake is not really there, but they feel that snake is there. So now we have to give them explanation of what that snake is, why even though there is no snake, they feel that the snake is there. So see, now let's come back to the mind. So keep this context in your mind when I explain this. Think about this. When we talk about the defilement process, so we know mind basically, fundamentally, there are two processes, right? There is a normal aggregation process and then there is a defilement process. So aggregation process is something which will happen even in the arhant's mind, right? Normal minding process. So even arhant will experience the sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and he will also be able to think. So that is a normal aggregation process or just the resulting process. So that is one process which is universal in everyone. And then there is a process which happens only in the people who are not arhants. So which one is that process? So that process is a defilement process. So defilement process means something that starts with a defilement. Defilement means something wrong. So what is the wrong in the defilement process? The wrong knowledge. So we did discuss, right, when we were talking about the mind, that whenever some sort of mind happens or when the experience happens, then there is always some sort of view which is involved in these experiences, in the generation of the mind itself. So when the mind is created with the wrong view, then what will be the result? Some sort of experience, but because that view is wrong, then that experience will be wrong. Isn't that so? The experience will also be wrong, but it will happen. Like a mirage, right? You know that when you see a mirage at the noon in the desert, there is no water, right? You know that if you were to... So imagine that this is a desert and you think there is a water there. So, if you did not know that it is just a mirage, then now you think that one day you can get the water. But if you really understand that this is something which happens in the mind or in our experience because of the lighting and refraction and all the physical causes, right? The way physics works, right? And biology works, we have this experience of mirage. But you understand it does not really correspond to the physical reality in any way. If you understand that, then there is no problem. But you can understand that such a thing as mirage can happen. It's not true, but it can happen. So then in the same way, this wrong knowledge, when the wrong knowledge is there, the corresponding experience can happen, but that experience cannot be true, right? So if I were to think that, let's say, someone among you, let's imagine that I had a wrong knowledge about one of you, and I thought that you have 10 children. So I ask you how your 9th children is doing. That is the question that I ask you. Now, what answer can you give to me about that question? there is no answer, right? Because you, let alone 9, you don't even have 1 children perhaps, right? So you don't have any answer to give me. What you have to tell me is that the knowledge based on which I am asking you question, that knowledge itself is wrong. Isn't that so? So that is what you have to understand. So now, how do you understand that the knowledge is wrong? It is not that you really... How do you convince me that the knowledge that I have is wrong? So you have to really make me convince somehow, right? That you don't have a children. So you somehow have to give me proof of that, right? So that is what you have to do. So when I get to know the truth, then in contrast to the truth, or only dependent on the truth, can you understand what is a lie, right? If you don't know the truth, then whatever other thing you believe apart from the truth, can that be truth? Are there what this? When we talk about the Buddha Dhamma, we are not talking about just mundane truth. We are talking about the ultimate truth. And there cannot be 10 ultimate truth. There can only be 1 ultimate truth. So if you don't know that ultimate truth, then whatever else you know, it has to be what? It might be very close to the ultimate truth, but is it still absolutely true what you believe if you don't know the ultimate truth, right? So, see, the whole Dhamma discussion that we had in earlier part of this sermon, we were talking about the Satipatthana, right? So, see, when we talk about this defilement process, what is the defilement process? Ignorance, attachment, vexation, abhisankara, and jati and jati dhamma. So ignorance basically means a wrong knowledge, right? So even if somehow I just tell you that this experience, right? So this man who was trying to hit the robot, when the robot did praise or blame them, they were trying to hit the robot. When the robot did blame them, and if the robot did praise them, then they wanted to be best friend with the robot. They were like, this person, he really likes me, he sees my good quality, let me be with them. So he wanted to be with this robot, right? So in either case, he did think what that this praise and blame, it came from somewhere, as in like something or someone. That is why they had this liking or disliking, right? I mean, when you have the raga and dvesha, liking and disliking, you have liking and disliking for something or someone, right? Tell me, how can you have a liking or disliking for... for what does not exist, really? How can you have a liking or disliking for that? If something that you think to be existing, when you come to the understanding that it is not really real, then now how can you keep your liking or disliking for that? So, I think now I'm opening many threads here, but now since this is a good opportunity, actually good time to share an interesting Dhamma story with you, let me share a Dhamma story from Buddha's time. So one time, Buddha was talking with the monks, right? And then he was telling the monks that, monks, imagine that there is a man and he has gone crazy. So Buddha was telling this story. Then Buddha was saying that he has gone crazy and... he says that, this crazy man, right? He says that he really, really loves this woman. So that is what he says, right? This crazy man, that he really, really loves this woman. So then now, of course, there are other, he has friends and relatives and family around him, around this crazy person. So let's say his friends, they ask him, okay, you like her? Okay, we will go and find her and we will... make you marry her, right? So, but tell us something about her so that we can help you. We can go and find her and we can help you be with her, right? So they ask this man about the details of the woman that he loves. So then, the friends ask this man, do you know what she looks like? Then this man is like, no, I don't know what she looks like. Then, okay, you don't know what she looks like, but you at least know what is her name, right? Then this man is like, name? I don't know what is her name, but I love her, you have to find her. Then they are like, okay, you haven't seen her, and you don't know the name either. Okay, but you might at least know where she lives, right? Then we can go there and get her. Then this man, Buddha says, right, he's crazy. So he says, no, I don't know where that woman lives, but I like her, you have to go and find her, right? Then these friends, they are, okay, you don't know what is her name, you don't know what she looks like, and you also don't know where she lives, okay. But you might at least know who are her family members and friends, right? Then maybe we can go to them, and then we can find her. Then this man is like, no, I don't know who are his family members or friends, I don't know. But I like her, you have to go and find her. So, then Buddha says, see, if there was someone like that, ladies and gentlemen, what would you call them? If you find a person like that, if one of your friends, they started to think like that, then what would you call them? You would not want to be with them, right? You would be like, this guy is crazy. That's what you would think. So now, you know, when I did read this first time in the scriptures, then I was like, what Buddha wants to say with this? I mean, so where Buddha talks about this story, he is not talking about how it is related to Dhamma directly. So, and then I was wondering, what does Buddha want to say by this story? But what Buddha wants to say is, see, we are all trying to be with this, right? The jati and jati dhamma, the things and people that we think are in this world, we are all always trying to be with them, right? The people and things. So Buddha is talking about this jati and jati dhamma when he talks about this crazy man who wants to find the woman that he really, really is in love with, right? He is talking about the jati and jati dhamma. So now, of course, we might be able to interpret the story in different ways, but the way I think about this story, this is how I think about this story. Right? Like when you imagine someone loves a mirage, and they don't know it is a mirage, then how would you help them, really? They really believe in the water so strongly. They are, see, this is the funny thing, you know, in our situation, the problem is, there is something, right? Let's say something, anything. Something, anything, some sort of person, object, something. There is something, we believe in something, as in, we believe in existence of something. There is something in this world at least, right? Something, at least one thing. And that one thing that we believe in, either we have a liking or disliking, right? You can, when you believe into something, then eventually you will have some sort of view about that thing in whose existence you believe, right? You will eventually have some sort of view, and according to that view, you will have either liking or disliking. And whether you have liking or disliking, now you will have a vexation. And when you have a vexation, because if you like this X, whatever that X is, right? I'm talking about just abstraction. Whatever that X is, if you like it, then apiyehi vipayoga dukkho. If you like it, so apiyehi vipayoga means what? You like it and you don't have it. So then what will be there? Vexation will be there. A problem for you, right? If you like it and you have it but you lost it, then again there will be suffering. And when you have it, if it does not want to be with you, then the effort that you have to put in order to keep it with you, that also gives what? Suffering, right? So if you like it, when you don't have it, suffering. Now I'm not saying suffering, but this is a fact of life, right? We conveniently, our focus is so much on the pleasure that happens when the vexation goes away for a moment that we have lost the whole plot about the suffering, right? The suffering that has to be there before, during and after. So when there is a liking, the suffering is there. If you dislike this X, then now, even when that X is away from you, even then you are afraid, right? So imagine that you dislike something. So imagine, let's take very mundane life example. So imagine that you don't like some food, and you live at home with your family. So are you, if let's say, so I'm now cooking up some things, right? This is not how real life family works, but just imagine if it were to work like this. So you live at your home with the family, and let's say you don't like a particular food. But you have a big family, and different people, they like different things, dislike different things. So your mom or whoever, they are doing the cooking, servants or whoever, they are doing the cooking according to keeping the maximum people in the mind, right? So then now perhaps the thing that you dislike, right, the other members in your family, they have a liking for that. So would you not feel little bit anxious or afraid that they will cook something that you don't like? Or maybe not anxious or afraid, but I don't know what's the correct word. Maybe you will feel little bit, I don't know. I mean, you will not be at peace, right? Because you know that someday, maybe they will cook the food that you don't like. So even when that food is not there, you are still not comfortable, right? You are still uncomfortable. But perhaps you are not conscious, but that feeling of uncomfortableness is still there. Even when you dislike something and it's not with you, even in that moment, you are not comfortable. Even if you think you are not really. And of course, when you have to associate with the things that you dislike, then of course you are suffering. And then, of course, when they go away, then now you feel happy. So imagine that you dislike something, and when it happens, and then it goes away, right? So then you feel happy, and you feel that happiness because you somehow think that the thing that you dislike, you will never have to encounter it again. But the thing is there anything like that in this universe? Something that has happened one time, what is the reason why it cannot happen second time? So forget about the marga phala, right? They cannot happen second time. Forget about them. But any other effect? If there is some effect which happens when you bring the causes together, then what is the reason why you cannot make it happen second time by bringing the causes together? So is there anything that you can keep away from yourself permanently? Is there a way to do that? Really? So forget about the dhamma, right? Forget about the marga phala. That is a very different thing. Any other worldly way? There is no way. There is no ultimate way to, you know, prevent the things that you like from away from yourself, really. There is no way. So when there is a liking or disliking, there will be a problem. And as long as this feeling that there is something or someone, right, as long as you don't understand what that feeling means, you will always have liking and disliking, and hence you will always have a suffering. And so this feeling of something, right, entity being there, you can think that it is a water in the mirage, or you can think about it as a snake that this crazy man, he was thinking, right? The snake is here on this table, the king cobra. So this feeling of something existing, that something exists in this world, right? I'm not saying nothing exists. Right? Because if I say nothing exists, then first I have to tell you what it is that does not exist. So think about this. This man, would it go crazy in the love with this woman? If someone were to go to his family, and if they were to ask the family of this crazy man about which woman your son was crazy about, then what would be the answer? Where is that woman that this man is crazy about? Is she anywhere outside his mind, really? So don't take broader implications, just keep yourself limited to that simile, that context and that example, right? So where is that woman that this man loves? Can you find, show it, show a picture or some certificate or name or birth or driving license or something that belongs to that woman and say that this woman is the woman which does not exist? Can you say that? You understand what I'm saying? Yes? This woman that this man loves, if someone were to ask, which woman this man thinks that exists, does not exist. I'm not sure whether I have been successful in forming that sentence, but did you all get what I'm trying to say? So if you say something does not exist, then first you have to tell me what it is that does not exist. Isn't that so? That is what I'm trying to say, right? If you say something does not exist, then obviously first you have to show me or tell me, give me some sort of description about what it is that does not exist or what it is that you are claiming to be non-existing. Now imagine if you find yourself in a world where nothing whatsoever that you think exists does really exist, then if you were to ask me questions, so I answer what it is that does not exist, then what answer should I give you? Tell me. What it is that does not exist. What answer should I give you? There is no answer to that question, right? This neck that this man thinks is here, if someone else were to ask that man, or okay, let's keep this example. So basically, so whether we talk about the mirage, we talk about the robot, or we talk about this king cobra on the top of this table, or we talk about this example of crazy men, whatever example we get, right, we have to do two things, right? Because first, this man is crazy. He thinks the king cobra is here, right? Then first we have to somehow convince him that there is no king cobra here. At least here it's not there. So we can't just tell him at the beginning that the feeling of king cobra that he has, it is just a feeling. We can't tell him that immediately, right? First we have to somehow convince him that what he thinks to be there physically, it's not there physically really. So the Satipatthana, see, when we did talk about this defilement process, the process that starts with the wrong knowledge, right? So what we have to understand is that because of wrong knowledge, this experience happens, but what we have to understand, when we do this Satipatthana, right? When we do the Kaya, Vedna, Chitta and Dhamma Anupasana, is, so basically, if I use this Pali words, basically what I mean to say is, when we do Anicca Dukkha and Anatta, when we contemplate Anicca Dukkha and Anatta, then I don't have to tell you what is the wrong knowledge, really. When you contemplate the truth, you will automatically understand what is the wrong knowledge. So then, can you try to understand wrong knowledge without understanding the truth? Can you do that? You can't do that. You have to understand truth. It is only in contrast to the truth can you have a lie or falsehood, right? So when you do Kaya Gata Sati or Kaya Anupassana, right, or the contemplation that everything is just a collection of causes, the effect is not something apart from the collection of causes, right? When you do that, the robot, if we talk about the robot, now if I were to disassemble the robot in front of you, I will take out the motors, I will take out the circuits, I will take out the capacitors and wires and transistors and metal parts and all these things I will take apart, right? I will remove from the robot. So, you know what we call robot is just collection of these parts, right? There is no robot in what we call or think as a robot, right? There is no thing in there which is called robot. The robot label is just what? It's just a what? It's just a label that we use in order to communicate, but it does not mean anything, right? The term robot. Now the thing is, that is how it is easy to think about the robot like that. But the thing is, everything in world is like that. Whenever we talk about something, the only thing that something that we are talking about means is that it is collection of causes. It doesn't mean anything else, really. So, but we don't feel in that way. We always feel how we are always thinking about this world in terms of doer and experiencer, right? What I mean by doer, doer as in agent of action, right? Someone who is responsible for doing. What did Buddha say? Did Buddha say the sankhara are done by satta or the sentient being? Is that what did Buddha say? Buddha did say sabbe sankhara anicchati, sabbe sankhara dukkhati. Buddha did say sabbe sankhara means all sankhara, right? All sankhara, abhisankhara, suddha sankhara, whatever sankhara, right? The pure mental fabrication or spatial mental fabrication, abhisankhara, whatever mental fabrication, abhisankhara, let's say just sankhara. Buddha did say all sankhara are what? Anicca and dukkha. About what do you think about this robot? Is there someone who wants to praise or blame you? Or is it just something that happens because the hardware is working, software is working, so those two things together, it's doing something, but you cannot say who is doing something, right? Do you understand what I'm saying? Yes? So, see, Buddha did say, sabbe sankhara anicchati, sabbe sankhara dukkhati. So, anicca means what? Whatever this robot does, it is not something he wants to do. It happens, and why it happens? Because the hardware and software, it works together. If that hardware and software did not work together, then whatever he is doing, he would not be able to do. Don't you all agree? If you had a robot, let's say in the future, when we have, when everyone perhaps has a robot in their home, then now perhaps, you have a robot who is supposed to clean your home. So now, what do you think if you remove some circuits from his body, right, then what will happen? Will it able to do the cleaning? Now imagine that you did not know it is a robot and you did think there is something in there which wants to do cleaning. Then now if someone had taken out the circuit, that is the reason why the robot is not doing cleaning. But perhaps like a normal servant, like sometimes, some people they are very harsh to their servants, right? If they don't do something, then they beat their servants or something. So imagine that this robot was working on one such home, in one such home. Then the owner of this robot, right, because they are deluded, they would start to hit the robot because they think the robot does not want to do the cleaning. Is there such a thing, really? Don't you think this is all crazy? So, this sankhara, right, they are anicca and dukkha, they are not supposed to happen. So, basically, you have to understand what? That this jati and jati dhamma, right? It is result of what? Wrong knowledge. But you can't just tell yourself it is a wrong knowledge. The only way you can say something is a wrong knowledge is when you understand what is the truth. So how do you understand what is the truth? For that, you have to contemplate anicca, dukkha and anatta. Because this wrong knowledge, right? This wrong knowledge means what? Nitya, sukha, atta. So basically, whenever the mind or some sort of experience happens with this particular wrong knowledge, the end product, right, the final experience of feeling which is there in such a mind is that there is something which wants to be in this way or which wants to do this thing, let's say, right? So, like this robot, right, the people, this crazy person, the crazy owner, he felt that there is a robot which wants to do the cleaning. So sometimes the robot does the cleaning. Sometimes the robot, the being which is there somehow, there is something, it is not doing cleaning. But you know, you are all wise. You know better. You know if the causes are all there, working properly, motors are working, program is working properly, it is charged, right? Everything is working properly in the hardware, software, then it will do whatever it is supposed to do. Right? There is no liking or disliking, and neither there is any preference, and you can't say what it is that is doing anything. Now imagine that if somehow, see, now this scientist, right, or this researchers, this engineers, right, because people have many interests, right, they are trying to now engineer robots to show what, the human feelings, just showing human feeling. Not that they have, how can robot have a feeling? But they are engineering the robots to show, right? So let's say if there was a robot in your home in the future and it did understand English, and you did tell him after he has cleaned your home, nice, you did to her it nicely, then he smiles at you. So do you think there is something which is which wants to smile at you? Or is it just program? It's just program, right? Does it mean anything? Does it mean anything special? If the program is there, whenever any robot, if the program is there, they will smile. Is there anything special? No. So, right. So, this question that someone asked, right, that even though they have heard, they have not realized, whoever has asked this question, because if we have a realization of all these things, then we would not have these experiences. We don't have enough realization or practice or understanding or wisdom, whatever you call it. That is why our life is full of problems, really. As we understand this philosophy and we clear the clutter in our own minds, right, and we have a clarity about Dhamma, the problem should reduce. So, someone has asked a question. I would like to know more about the concept of anatta and how I can use this concept to improve myself in order to achieve the sotapanna stage in my daily life. Is it possible to attain the stage of sotapanna living a life in big city but keeping the precepts? So first question, the concept of anatta. So the whole thing that I did explain from the beginning, kind of I'm now trying to tell you about the anitta. Actually anatta. I have not explained you anicca and dukkha so much in today's sermon. I'm directly talking about the anatta. When I say there is no robot in the robot, then I'm talking about the anatta. When I'm telling you that there is nothing in the robot which wants to smile, then I'm explaining anatta. When I tell you that the feelings, right, they are result of causes coming together, they are not feelings of someone, then I am explaining you anatta. So these are all explanation of anatta, right? So I have explained anatta. And how I can use this concept to improve myself in order to achieve the sotapanna stage in my daily life. So people, they become sotapanna by practicing different things, right? So you know that fundamentally we have to understand anicca, dukkha and anatta. Now the thing is, according to the temperament that you have, or the gati that you have, or whatever spiritual faculties you have developed in sansara, according to those spiritual faculties, you will be able to practice either anicca, dukkha or anatta, one of them more easily than the other two, right? So whatever you are able to practice easily, you can understand either anicca, dukkha and anatta. When you understand anicca, you will definitely understand dukkha and anatta, but perhaps you are not always able to practice dukkha or anatta. You can practice anicca easily, then you practice anicca. If you can practice dukkha easily, then you practice dukkha. If you can practice anatta, then you can practice anatta easily, right? So usually they say that people who have lot of virya, right, the courage or effort, they can do this anicca anupasana very easily, right? They can contemplate anicca very easily, right? And then the people who have lot of shraddha, right? So shraddha does not mean faith, but it means the conviction into something, right? So if you have lot of conviction that Buddha was fully enlightened and what he says is definitely true, and it will definitely help you get enlightened, right? If you have very strong faith like that, right? Some people, they have very strong confidence into something that they believe, right? So that shraddha, if you are someone who has lot of shraddha, that faculty is highly developed, then now you can practice dukkha easily, it is said, right? And someone who has lot of wisdom, who can understand things very easily, they can do analysis and investigation very easily, they can perhaps practice the anatta easily, right? So So it doesn't matter. You don't have to fall into any of these schemes, right? Whatever you can practice easily from Dhamma, any Dhamma point that you learn and in which you have a very high confidence that this is definitely true, you know, you try to pick such a Dhamma point and you practice such a Dhamma point really. If you understand, just example, that there is a no robot in the robot, then now you try to think like that for everything, right? Just as there is no robot in robot, there is no chair in the chair, there is no human in the human, really, right? There are organs here, but there are no special electrons, protons, neutrons here. The electrons, protons, neutrons which are there everywhere else, they are the same electrons, protons and neutrons which are here as well. So what is the special? There is nothing special, right? So you can practice like that. So these are all different ways, but it doesn't matter what you practice, but you need to have some conviction into something, right? So you don't have equal confidence in all Dhamma facts, right? When I tell you there is nothing in this world, you might be like, what? How is there nothing in this world? So you don't feel so much confidence in that, then that's okay. You don't need to pick that. You pick up something that you understand and you practice according to that, right? So that is how you can eventually become a Sotapanna, right? But remember, in order to become Sotapanna, until you become Sotapanna, you have to keep listening to the sermons, right? Because one of the causes which you need in order to become Sotapanna is you need to listen to Dhamma from someone who themselves has realized the Dhamma. Without them, you cannot realize Dhamma. So, if I understand Dhamma today, that is because of my teacher, because he has understood Dhamma. Why does my teacher understand Dhamma? Because his teacher has taught him Dhamma and his teacher has realized Dhamma. And if we trace this lineage all the way back, then where will you think, where does it start? With the Buddha, right? So all the way from Buddha, this knowledge comes, right? And when you practice Dhamma more and more, you will realize that Dhamma is not something you can write in the books. It is an intuitive knowledge. Can you write intuition in book, really? You cannot write intuition, right? You have to train yourself, right? To have an intuition. So this anicca, dukkha and anatta is like an intuitive knowledge really. It's not something, so language can take you to certain extent, but then you have to be on your own, right? So right, so is it possible to attain the stage of Sotapanna living a life in big city? Yes, there is, the physical location is not issue, but keeping the precepts, yes, it's very important to keep precepts and have good qualities in your mind and have a good character, right? And to observe precepts. So I'm not saying the mechanical physical observance of precepts, right? It's not chanting Panadipata Veramani every day, which is so important. It is doing it, which is important, right? And of course, Panadipata Veramani, of course, in a very gross sense, it only means what? You don't kill anything. But actually, if you think in a deeper way, what it means is that we don't want to harm anyone in this whole world, right? That is what it means. So you going late to your office to annoy your boss, that is also Panadipata. You think it's not Panadipata? It's also Panadipata Veramani. Because why? You are doing that to hurt them, right? Because you don't like them, and when you don't like them, then do you want those things to exist or not exist? When you don't like things, then you want them to not exist. So why do you hurt those things or people? Because you want them to not exist. So if you do something with having intention to make something existing into non-existing, then are you not doing Panadipata Veramani? Is that not a killing? Right? So that is also killing. So that is now very, very broad and very subtle meaning, but that is also meaning, really. Right? So this Panadipata, it's not just limited to you not killing other people or beings, really. So you have to keep precepts. Okay, let's conclude the sermon today. I have two or three questions with me. We can perhaps discuss them in the next week, right? So let's do the merit transfer. and finish today's sermon. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirit, listening to the Dhamma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in the receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings, and with immense gratitude, let us transfer this merit to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, Upasakas and Upasikas who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer the merits to Guru Swayahanse and all the monks resident at this monastery, as well as Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating this sermon, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May through the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the constructions of the monastery, to those of you who have provided the Mahasangha with the shelters, arms, ropes and medicines, as well as those of you who have passed on their know-how and extend their well wishes. May through the power of this merits, if they are born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins and nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employers and employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape or form. May by the power of this merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacle to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakkadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer merits to our guardian deities who keep the watchful over us and keep us out of harm's way. May through the power of this merits, they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those who have been our family, friends and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey of sansara, who have helped us, supported us and assisted us in every way they could. Let us transfer this merits. Let us also transfer merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who have lost their lives in the war, be they friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired today. Let us also transfer merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural disasters such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this infinitely long journey of sansara. Let us take a moment to transfer merits to them. May through the power of this merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Finally, let us resolve that may through the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired today, throughout the day, we will all be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arhats on this blessed land. And may through the power of this merits we have acquired today, you and I and everyone who has helped make this program a success become arhantuhanse or arhantamhenyuhanse in this very life and in the era of Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all.